Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Quite a bit of backlash from yesterday's show. We'll talk more about that on our next show. There's not enough time. Suffice to say that if we're going to talk about anything, we will talk about the fact that supposedly Tessa Blanchard and El Rosa Negro have come to a meeting of the minds and they have forgiven each other. Well, come by. Thank you very much. So Tessa Blanchard says, this isn't going to go away. This is going to haunt me for my entire career. So I guess I'm forced to get on the horn with El Rosa Negro and say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. My bad. And it all goes away. Okay. That's fine. It all goes away. Well, if that's all it takes, then I don't know why Hulk Hogan just didn't get on the horn. Didn't he? Didn't he say, I'm sorry? How come that didn't all go away? Maybe there's just a double standard. Maybe if you're a woman, you can get away with all of this stuff. You can spit in African-American women's faces and call them the N-word. And then 3 years later, call up and say, oh, I'm sorry. My bad. And everything's forgiven. All is fine. See, here's the problem. You only apologize if you're really sorry and you do that, you know, an hour after the incident. When you apologize after you were caught, and by the way, denied it, what did you apologize for if you didn't do it? I thought your first statement was, I didn't do it. And now you apologize for it. 2 years later. Three. Almost three. That doesn't sound like I'm sorry. That sounds like, oh boy, I better save my ass and swallow my pride, and apologize. If I was El Rosa Negro, I wouldn't have taken the apology. I would have said, tough. You saw you got caught, I'm sure. But it doesn't take 2.5 years to come to the realization that I probably shouldn't have done that. No? Anyway, enough of that. Monday Night Raw last night advertised a hell of a show, didn't they? They had advertised AJ Styles versus Randy Orton. Turned out that we got a little bit more than that, but that's what they advertised. Rusev versus Bobby Lashley. Brock Lesnar showing up. The contract signing between Becky Lynch and Asuka for the Royal Rumble. Part three, round three of Buddy Murphy versus Aleister Black. And a fist fight, a first ever WWE fist fight between Seth Rollins and the AOP. Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens, and The Big Show. That's a pretty stacked card. That's a pretty stacked card for you fans in Kentucky. And I got to tell you that it was a really good crowd. This crowd popped for things that I probably myself wouldn't have popped for. So the WWE can be thankful for that. Now, did they deliver? Well, we're going to discuss that a little bit because I think the answer is both yes and no. We get our first match, which, of course, is Randy Orton coming out saying he's calling out AJ Styles. I have no idea why he's calling him out when we already know there's a match, but that's what he does. He and AJ Styles get into a little bit of the war of the words, and then Drew McIntyre comes out, and he's still walking that tweener aisle between I'm not really a heel and I'm not really a face. I'm kind of somebody in between. And he basically says, look, I got the best finishing maneuver, and I'm the guy that you're going to have to throw out of the Royal Rumble, and you're not going to be able to do that. And how about we just have a change this to a three-way dance, which the crowd pops for. Now, I'm going to tell you And I know some people disagree. I've read online, oh, outstanding, fantastic match. Fans were chanting, this is awesome. Very true. Fans were chanting, this is awesome. I particularly did not think this was an excellent match. I thought at times it looked awkward. I thought at times it was very oddly paced. And I thought at times kind of dumb stuff happened. Like, well, Drew McIntyre's not really hurt. He just got thrown over the ropes, but he'll sit there for 5 minutes. Why? I wasn't overly thrilled with it. And I wasn't even overly thrilled with the ending, because that is a heel ending. When you rob a face, which Randy Orton is now, Randy Orton's a face now. When you rob a face of a victory by using his finishing maneuver that he applies to someone, throwing him out of the ring and covering the guy without even applying your own finishing maneuver, you literally stealing the victory, that would be a heel. And if you're going for Drew McIntyre is not a heel anymore, Drew McIntyre is sort of a tweener or a face, I have no idea why you would do that. You would think you would do the opposite, and you would have him do it with AJ Styles at least, because at least Styles is a heel. And if Styles is a heel, then Styles delivers his finisher and Drew McIntyre dumps him and pins Randy Orton. That makes some sense. The reverse didn't seem to make that much sense to me. Now, it wasn't a horrible match. I'm not saying, oh, this was boring or this was terrible. It's just that considering the three people in it are arguably three of your very, very, very top-level guys, I don't think it tore the house down. I watched it and said, yeah, you know, okay. Never at any moment was I, you know, biting my fingernails saying, I wonder what's going to happen, or, oh, that was awesome. That was just, it was a serviceable match. It was okay. And then when the ending came, I said, I don't like it. I really don't like the way they ended that. There's better ways to end that if you want to promote Drew McIntyre, which obviously you do. So I don't know, Mike. I mean, you know, I'm 50-50 with this. It wasn't terrible, but at the same time, I think given the three people in there, it should probably have been a little bit better than it was.
That's the optimum word, 50-50. And it's very confusing because we said last week on the last Raw show that we did after Raw, you know, that when he came back and when McIntyre comes back into the ring and says, do you want to see another Claymore kick? Yes or no? That was a face move. We thought, okay, they're going to flip him. Well, again, the ending of a match doesn't fit with what he's done before. That's why I say it's confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing. I don't know. I guess they want us to think of him as a tweener right now, but I just think it would have been better off in reverse. Maybe Randy Orton doesn't want to get pinned before the Royal Rumble or whatever. It's inconsequential. Because AJ didn't do it. So their feud continues. It doesn't matter whether AJ's pinned or Randy Orton's pinned. The entire focus of this match, quite obviously, was twofold. One is to further the AJ Styles-Randy Orton feud, and two is to get Drew McIntyre involved in a big main event type way. So did you succeed? Well, AJ Styles was pinned again, which means if he's pinned by Randy Orton, AJ Styles is fast heading downhill. Randy Orton hasn't been pinned in a while, so I don't see why Randy Orton couldn't have taken that pin. AJ Styles hit him with a finisher. Drew McIntyre knocked AJ Styles out of the ring. I would have booked it this way. I would have had AJ Styles give the Styles Clash to Randy Orton. When he saw that he wasn't going to get the pin because Drew McIntyre was coming in, he stands up, catches a Claymore kick. But the Claymore kick knocks him outside the ring, so rather than McIntyre going outside the ring and throwing him back in and wasting all that time, McIntyre just covers Randy Orton. That way, people could say, well, I mean, he probably would have beat AJ anyway with the Claymore. Nobody's gotten up from it yet. So he just took the more advantageous route, and that was smart. This wasn't really smart. It was devious in a heel sort of perspective. So I'm not sure that was the best ending for that match, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was not the best ending right there. Like you said, it's a mismatch right there, and it was going all different directions and everything. And like you said, it's a good match.
I mean, I don't think it was a horrible match. I just don't think it was a good ending. I don't think it accomplished what it set out to accomplish. So if you want to look at it from, we're not trying to accomplish anything, did all these three guys do okay in the ring? Yeah. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of, did we accomplish, excuse me, what we set out to accomplish? No, I don't think so. Brock Lesnar comes out. This whole thing is a joke. I'm getting very tired of Brock Lesnar. I'm going to be very honest with you. I just don't know what more you want to milk out of this guy. He says nothing. He does nothing. The Paul Heyman shtick with him is just getting to be old hat. Okay, you introduced R-Truth into the mix and the whole thing, and then whatever. Whatever. It was funny, but at the same time, that's your best use of Brock Lesnar? So we had some preliminary matches, kind of. We had Ricochet against Mojo. It's a pretty short match, really, and I thought that Mojo didn't probably help himself any. He looks great coming to the ring. His facial expressions, his whole look is good. But when he gets in the ring, he seems awkward. And he definitely is not at his best against very fast opponents with a lot of motion. He's a guy who wants to slug it out. You're going to have to put him in the ring with guys and, that slug it out if you want to see the best of Mojo. Taking these high-flying moves and moving in a quick, position-to-position type thing is not his strong point. And even though Ricochet let him get in some decent offense, Mojo stays kind of right where he is, Mike, which is lower middle of the pack.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, a lot of these guys, they don't know what they want to do with them. I mean, we thought they had something with the introspection thing that he was doing with the mirror and all that stuff. And then they threw him into the thing with Rowan with the cage, and we'll get to that, but where he had that classic reaction to seeing what was inside the cage. That was good. But they don't know what they want to do with this guy.
No, I think they're on the fence with him because there are times when in the ring he doesn't look very good. But again, you got to put him in there against the right people. Ricochet is definitely not the right type of person to put Mojo Rawley in there with. He's not going to be able to keep the pace. Ricochet slowing down the pace isn't really the answer. It's just not advantageous to Mojo. And, there's going to be people who say, well, then he's not very good because a good wrestler can handle everybody. Yeah, you're right. But what I'm saying is there's better uses for him. He's there. Whether he's excellent or mediocre, he's there. So if you're going to use him, at least use him to the best of, the ability. You're not supposed to pound in a screw with a hammer. You're supposed to use a screwdriver. You could potentially, I guess, pound that screw in if you want, but it's not gonna work to its most advantageous. So use the right tool for the right job is what I'm saying, and I don't think Mojo was the right tool for this job. We get a squash match basically with the Colognes and Viking Raiders. Not much to talk about there. So let's skip to one segment of Raw that somewhat angered me a little bit. We get Charlotte Flair and Sarah Logan finally having the fight that they didn't have last week because Sarah Logan decided she was going to sneak attack Charlotte and try to rip her robe, and Charlotte left her lying in a heap. So here's optimistic Marcus sitting on my couch saying, they're going to let Sarah Logan take this somehow. Maybe count out, maybe DQ, maybe double DQ, but they're going to build Sarah Logan because they wouldn't put her back in the ring again after just being humiliated last week. They wouldn't put her back in the ring with Charlotte again just to have her get dusted. What would be the point? Well, boy, was I wrong. under 1 minute. Under 1 minute tap out, Charlotte Flair. Can someone please tell me what earthly sense this makes? In a federation that is dying for more top-level women's wrestlers, and I don't mean talent-wise, I mean booking-wise, women who are near the top in the booking area. We have two. Becky Charlotte. You could say Asuka, but she's in a tag team, and she's not going to win the title, and what's the point? You couldn't be building Sarah Logan up a little bit? You couldn't have had Sarah Logan win by count out, or it's a double disqualification, or a double count out, or something in which you say, wow, you know, look, Sarah Logan, since she's returned, has been a force to be reckoned with. Charlotte had a lot of trouble with her. And there's still no victor. The feud continues. Both myself and Mike said last week, why was this not a spot in which you use this particular feud to build Sarah Logan toward something bigger? She doesn't have to beat Charlotte. I'm not saying she has to 1-2-3 Charlotte in the middle of the ring. I'm not saying that. But could she at least go for a count-out victory? Could she at least get a double disqualification, a double count-out, something that leads you to believe she can hang with Charlotte? That she is a force to be reckoned with? That we have another woman that is going to step up and be a top contender? Can we do that? I guess the answer is no, we can't do that. So Sarah Logan gets to come out with her Viking whatever persona and do her all of her scream and her, and then just tap out in 1 minute and look like a total wuss. A total wuss. I don't get it. I don't get it, and I don't like it, Mike.
I don't get it either. And to tell you the truth, Charlotte's reaction after the match doesn't scream face. They want Charlotte to at one point, I thought they wanted Charlotte to be the face and what's her name to be the heel, right? And
yeah,
had they done the whole robe ripping thing, that would have made Sarah Logan the heel. But look at the reaction. She stands there, looks down at her with her disdain, and then she kind of wipes her feet on her or something.
And then she picks her up and throws her out of the ring.
Yeah, that's not a face reaction.
No, that's what I said. Everything's kind of ass backwards. I'm not really sure what's going on. But if you got Sarah Logan ready to go, could you not promote her a little bit? Her big comeback has been Charlotte took me out after I desecrated her robe, and now it's I tapped out to Charlotte in a minute. So now you're just Jabron Central. Todd, this is obviously not the best use for a person like Sarah Logan.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's ass backwards booking right there. And Charlotte's supposed to be the face, not the heel. And Sarah Logan should be the heel, not the face. It's mixed up booking right there. It's
twice it happened, too. That's the thing. I mean, it happened in the Drew McIntyre match where they threw a weird signal at the end, and now it happened with the Charlotte Flair thing, and I don't get it. By the way, the Viking Raiders are getting a zero reaction with this open challenge thing. It's not working, okay? It's not working. So we get Rusev versus Bobby Lashley. And there are some people who wrote to me this morning and said, you know, this wasn't as heated and wild and crazy as I thought it might be. It was okay, but it didn't, you know, it wasn't as, the crowd was a little bit quiet for it. And it didn't seem to, you know, have the energy. Well, I got news. This is the best you're going to get from Bobby Lashley. What you saw last night, forget the Rusev thing. We know what Rusev can do. This is it. This is what you're going to get from Bobby Lashley. This is as good as he gets. What you saw last night was a 5-star match from Bobby Lashley as far as what Bobby Lashley can do, because he can't do any better than this. This was him at his best. If it's not, and I've said forever, it's not very good. It is what it is. If you can pull this kind of match out of him, you should say, hallelujah, thank God, good enough, move on because you're not getting any better. He didn't deliver any better in Impact. He's not going to deliver any better here. This is what he does. This is him. So, no, it didn't have that big fight feel. No, it didn't have that huge, violent whatever to it that it probably should have had. And the ending, I'm mystified by, again, because we have Liv Morgan come down. Dare Lana to hit her. Stands right in front of her, and Lana does beat the hell out of her. So how tough is Sarah Logan? I mean, when has Lana suddenly become, you know, Awesome Kong? What is going on? So while Lana's beating the hell out of Liv Morgan, pretty much disqualifying Liv Morgan from ever being a serious contender for Charlotte or Becky, right? If you can't outfight Lana, then let's not see you step in the ring with them. Bobby Lashley ends up getting the pin. Gets a clean pin on Rusev. Okay. And then we get, well, next week, Rusev and Liv Morgan are going to team up to fight Lana and Bobby Lashley. Well, I don't want to see it. I'm not that interested in it because I saw Lashley and Rusev and it blew. Not because Rusev's not good, because Rusev is good. I've seen Rusev in matches that I thought were awesome. But Bobby Lashley's not going to deliver, so you can forget that. And I don't think Lana's going to deliver, quite frankly. She hasn't been in the ring in a long time. I don't see her give and taking with Liv Morgan and making us all go, oh, you know, like it's Becky Lynch and you know, Charlotte Flair. It's not going to happen. So it's just going to be another gimmicky type thing. Meanwhile, on his Twitter, I guess, Rusev put, I'm very close to being a free agent. Don't let this fool you. Rusev's not going anywhere. I will be the most shocked man on the planet if Rusev goes somewhere. This is just him trolling people. But at the same token, how does this help Rusev's career in any way? Are you going to team up with Liv Morgan? What's that going to be, your new love interest? Your new love interest is a bisexual who slept with your wife? You know, I don't know. I guess I have to say I was a little disappointed in this, Mike, because I just think that it was anticlimactic.
It really was anticlimactic. And the fact of the matter is, yes, at one point they tried with Lana to put her in the ring, and she was showing a little improvement, but they cut her off at the knees. And I don't know if we're ready to buy into her getting back in the ring again until they make a serious effort with her. And we know what Rusev can do. I mean, to tell you the truth, Rusev should be one of the guys that KO and what you call it, and we'll get around to that, but KO and Samoa Joe and stuff should go out and look for, because he can handle himself. He can beat the crap out of people, you know, and that's what they need. Now we'll get around to that, but yeah, I mean, Rusev is going nowhere. This is not just him trolling, but he's also negotiating with the WWE there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Todd, it was a little anticlimactic. I didn't think this was, but I do think this is about the best Bobby Lashley can do.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like you said, I never liked this angle from the get-go when this first thing started with Lashley and Rusev and Lana and Liv Morgan. I just don't like it all together. Like I said before, I just didn't care for it. I still don't like it now.
It's not working for me. It's starting to have a ring of such untruth and fantasy to it that, like, you can't even buy it anymore. You know, at first you're like, okay, I guess I can force myself to believe this. And now you're just like, nah, I can't. It's not, you know, none of it's even feasible. So we get, let's see. We get the contract signing. I think they're making a, a little bit of a mistake. I know what they're trying to do, and I applaud them for trying to do it, because I think if it was done right, then it would work. But I don't think it's being done right, and that is having Becky Lynch be like lose her confidence and say, I don't know if this is the right decision, and I'm going to do my best, but I really don't. Gee, I don't think I can rise to the occasion, but I'm going to give it my all because I really have to find out. Becky Lynch is popular because she's the, you know, Irish last kicker who has that all that confidence in the world of bring it, bring it, bring it. It would be okay for her to say, I'm fully aware that Asuka has beaten me twice. I'm fully aware that many people think that I'm the underdog. I've been the underdog before. But I don't think Asuka's fully aware that this is not the same Becky Lynch. And if I'm going to prove to anyone that that's true, I'm going to beat Asuka. Of course, I have a little trepidation, but I'm anxious. I'm waiting. This is my moment. Instead, I think you're changing her in a way that fans are going to say, I don't like this Becky Lynch. Now she gets the green mist spit in her face. She cuts a pretty good promo and all that stuff. But, I don't know if the fans are going to take to this. I understand what the WWE is trying to do. I just don't think they're doing it right.
Right. I get what they're trying to do. And like you, I just don't think they're doing it the correct way. But that's about par for the WWE over the last year or so. They do things, but they do them almost in a half-assed way, you know. And it just doesn't seem right. And what I did like, though, is, and I understood why they got, what's her name, why they got Kairi Sane out of the ring right away, because, you know, they're not at all positive that she's able to do anything specific in the ring right now with her, you know, that. I get that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the right move. But let me give you an analogy, and at the same time, let me give you a very short review. I watched a movie yesterday called, I believe it was called, Never Leave Alive, and it had John Morrison in it from SmackDown. And he played supposedly a TV celebrity big game hunter who was a drunk, and he ends up on this island with only one other survivor, which is a woman, and, well, technically, and a guy who's so badly hurt, he's just clinging to life. And on this island is a former Russian KGB agent and his assistant, and they play basically the most dangerous game. They hunt human beings. And this guy says, okay, well, you're going to be my top prize because you are a top hunter. In this movie, as God is my witness, I'm not going to reveal the ending. You guys go watch it. In this movie, Morrison's character is helpless. He's rescued almost every single time by the girl. He shows absolutely no skill in hunting. He shows absolutely no balls. He shows absolutely unwillingness to kill anyone or do anything horrible. As a matter of fact, there's a point where he could easily have killed one of the henchmen and instead radios in and tells the bad guy, this guy's hurt. You better hurry. He doesn't look good. He becomes so weak and feckless that by the end of the movie, you're saying to yourself, I really don't care about this character. Why isn't he a badass? Why isn't he a Stone Cold Steve Austin? Why isn't he saying, look, I'm going to use all of my hunting skills. He thinks he's hunting us. I'm hunting him. That's what he doesn't realize. You're the number one hunter in the world, and you're on the cover of magazines, and you're feckless and unable to recognize booby traps on the ground and can't get out of your own way. This is bad character development. Well, this is what the WWE does all the time. I'm surprised the WWE staff didn't write this movie, because this is exactly what I'm talking about. You cannot relate to his character because you say, no, this character should have been a badass who says, okay, he's booby-trapped this entire island. I already know what some of these things look like. And we're going to have to use all this stuff against him. We'll pull him into my trap. I'm a hunter too. No, we didn't one time see any skill that would indicate that he's anything but a boob running around in the jungle. Doesn't work. Well, it also doesn't work when Becky Lynch is suddenly, oh, gee, I don't know if I could ever beat Oscar. What are you talking about? You fought Oscar, I don't know how many times in tag team match and whooped her ass. And by the way, Charlotte's beaten her a couple times, and you've beaten Charlotte. So I don't get this. I know you want that soul-searching. You want to make it very serious. You want Becky Lynch to say, I got to go deep into my soul for this. That's fine. Her first promo where she said they've been protecting me from Asuka because they don't think I can beat her, that's a good one. And then for her to say, and deep down inside, maybe I don't know if I can either. But I do know this. I said the same thing when it was Ronda Rousey. I said the same thing when it was Charlotte Flair. I don't know. But I did it. And if I can beat them, I can sure as hell beat Asuka. That's all you need to do. She could show signs, little signs of confidence fading. But you don't come out with this gee whiz, I don't know routine because it doesn't suit Becky Lynch. And then fans see a side they don't want to see. Todd?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like you said, with that movie with John Morrison, it sounds like
a saw it too?
Movie right there.
You saw that?
The way you're talking, it sounds like,
yeah, no.
like a bad movie. I remember watching The Condemned.
Yeah, well, now see, The Condemned was right because what was Stone Cold Steve Austin? He was a badass. Okay? Morrison in this movie was just a weak. He acted like he was a 14-year-old frat boy instead of a big game hunter who'd been on the cover of magazines and had his own reality TV show and was a huge celebrity for his cunning and hunting skills. Oh, he showed none. Absolutely none. There's actually a part in the movie where the main bad guy says it to him. You're a complete coward. You have no skill whatsoever. What? Like I said, it's like the WWE wrote the movie. Anyway, Luke Harper, we'll get to Luke Harper in a minute because first, of course, we got to get to Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy. Once again, a great match. And I'm going to tell you something. There was a spot in this match that I wish Buddy Murphy didn't slightly hesitate on because it would have been the highlight probably of 2020. And that is when he's on the top turnbuckle and Aleister Black runs up and kicks him and he literally flies off the back turnbuckle backwards against the guardrail. If he could have timed that, if you watch it, he gets hit first and then you sort of see him purposely throw himself backwards. It doesn't appear like the kick was the momentum for knocking him off. It more looks like he lost his balance and fell. If they could have made it look like Aleister Black's kick was so devastating, it knocked him completely off that buckle and threw back, and it was only a fraction of a second hesitation. That would have been one of the coolest spots I've ever seen in a wrestling match, and I've never seen it before. That was awesome, but it missed by just that little bit. But nonetheless, I'm saying to myself, they almost got to let Buddy Murphy win this. What are you going to do, lose three in a row? And then I don't know whether this was done on purpose. I like to think it was done on purpose. Aleister Black gives him the black mass, and Buddy Murphy gets his shoulder up. Now, it doesn't appear he really got his shoulder up. It almost looks like the referee just said he got his shoulder up. And Aleister Black either did a really good job of acting, or he looked really confused, like, what? This is not good. People aren't supposed to kick out of my move, and now this stupid referee blew it. So he just instantly gives him another one and pins him. So I don't know if that was a mistake. If it wasn't a mistake, then they're trying to build up Buddy Murphy, which is very possible after what happens. But at the same time, it didn't make Aleister Black look good. And I got to tell you that Buddy Murphy could be Aleister Black's downfall, even though Aleister Black has won all these matches, and I'll tell you why. Aleister Black was this guy who they were going to shoot to the top. And Buddy Murphy was a guy who was going to be like a middle of the pack, you know, Dolph Ziggler type. And for them to get three matches so closely fought and almost, you know, lose every single match and all of this stuff. And now with what happened later with Buddy Murphy, it makes you wonder if Aleister Black doesn't look like, well, he could barely beat Buddy Murphy, so don't tell me he's going to take on Brock Lesnar, or don't tell me he's going to take on Seth Rollins. He barely could beat Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy could end up actually being Aleister Black's downfall. The quality of the matches they put on didn't match the booking they were getting. Aleister Black was getting main eventer, five-star guy, and Buddy Murphy was getting middle-of-the-pack, two-and-a-half-star guy, and yet Buddy Murphy shone in those matches, and it kind of brought Aleister Black's five-star down to, well, he's kind of at the same level as Buddy Murphy. Well, Buddy Murphy wasn't at a big level. He was a mid-carder. So I wonder if that's going to hurt Aleister Black's future push. But it was a really good match, Mike. I just, you know the spot I'm talking about. Go back and watch it, and you'll see, like, the kick lands, and then a fraction of a second after it lands, Buddy Murphy launches himself backwards. If he could have done it on impact, what a great, great spot that would have been.
That would have been almost as great of a spot as Kevin Owens getting thrown backwards off the cage.
Right.
I think he meant to do it.
I think he meant to do it, Mike. I think he really was going to do it, and it didn't work out that way.
Right, I like the reaction after the match from Buddy Murphy and what he did, you know.
Yeah.
I would have done the exact same thing. That's the exact same reaction I would have had. Just sit there and soak and brood and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, see, what has happened now is you got a Buddy Murphy you can relate to. Remember, we talked about storyline and we talked about relatability. And we said you don't have to say I would do the same thing necessarily, but you have to be able to say I understand where he's coming from. So now you got a Buddy Murphy who says I've lost 3 times in a row and I've given it my all. Maybe I'm just not good enough. I really have to start rethinking things. I'm disgusted with myself. I'm disgusted with my career. I'm disgusted with everything. This gives him the motivation. And we had the Eric Rowan match, another throwaway thing. This gives him the motivation for what he does. Because when he's called upon later to help, he has to make a decision. My career is going nowhere. I've lost 3 straight times to Aleister Black. I have a chance now to get in with a main event, top-notch click, and he doesn't turn it down. You can relate to that. Now, maybe you'd say, well, I wouldn't help a snake like Seth Rollins. Okay, that's great, but you can still relate to why Buddy Murphy did it. That's what's good about it. You have the relatable aspect. You have the motivation. Remember, we talked about this. If any of you listening to this show did not listen to our little seminar on good story writing for professional wrestling, it's in our archives. You really should. It was our most listened to show, and it was the most reacted to show. It had the motivation. It had the relatability. And for that reason, fans are buying into it and saying, wow. See, they're not talking about Aleister Black right now. They're talking about Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy is the new member. Wow. This is gangbusters for his career. It sure is. And this is what I talk about when I say losing doesn't have to make you a jabron. He lost 3 straight to Aleister Black. But because of what you did afterwards, you have now basically reinvented him. He's a brand new Buddy Murphy. He's with a team that's going to help him win. He's going to go on a rampage. You know he is. He's not going to be losing every week. You are now seeing how you can put a guy over and still get yourself over if the writing is good. This was actually good writing. This was very good writing. Now, the match itself, I don't know what the difference is between a street fight and this. It's the same thing. Kevin Owens is saying, I don't know about the rules and this. Well, I don't know, man. It's the same thing. You're just fighting all over the building. this is no different than a street fight or anything else, except, well, the referee has to decide you can't continue any longer. Well, I don't like that stipulation the way it ended, because how many of these kicks did the Fiend take again before they stopped the match? About 47 of them. One, and the Big Show's done. Well, he can't go on. The match was, you know, a little bit of a bumblefuck. It was okay. There were some spots that were good. Kevin Owens' spot where he ran and did the dive was absolutely tremendous. Joe tried to do the same thing with a senton. It was pretty good, but it wasn't like Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens' one was awesome. And Seth Rollins is really at home. He is right in the pocket when he's this kind of a heel. They did so many right things with the storyline to this match that the fact that the match was so-so doesn't bother me. Because what you've done now is you've kind of solidified that maybe Seth Rollins is sort of a locker room leader. I mean, after all, Buddy Murphy came into the fold pretty quick. The AOP came into the fold pretty quick. Who's next? Plus, it leaves you with a question, which is always good story writing, and that is, now what are they going to do? They're going to need a fourth member. Samoa Joe's crew and Kevin Owens' crew, they can't go 3-on-4. So who's it going to be? Is it going to be Aleister Black? Is it maybe going to be Eric Rowan after all, like we have predicted? We don't know. It's going to be somebody. Maybe it's just going to be Ray. Who knows? But Ray's going to be up for a ladder match. Now, the WWE continued their, to a lesser extent, they continued their booking 1 week ahead of time, so you know what's coming, which I like. We know we got the ladder match with Andretti next week. That sounds good. We know we got the mixed tag team match, which does not sound good to me, but at least we know it's there. It's being promoted. We're not tuning into Raw saying, I have no idea what we're going to see. And that's a positive. So I think more positive than negative came out of this final match, Mike.
I think you're right. And look, to tell you the truth, if it's supposed to be a fist fight, then Kevin Owens' team should have won that thing going away, because all the Big Show would have to do is top, 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 and right. The other three guys are down. That's it. If this was truly right. A fist fight, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't a fist fight.
It was a false count, almost a false count anywhere.
It was a street fight, yeah.
Right. So, but they should have said that. They should have said it's not a fist fight. It's this. They promised. That's like a bait and switch. They promised something and gave you something totally different. And
right.
Like I said, if this was a total fist fight, then Kevin Owens' team should have won going away.
Right, which I don't, again, I'm glad they didn't, because I don't think Seth Rollins' team should suffer a loss this early, or they're going to go the OC route where they just become a joke. Seth Rollins' team has got to get the upper hand almost always, where you say, man, just when you think it's their time to get theirs, they pull something out of their ass again. They certainly made it look like Kevin Owens' team was well on its way to victory until Buddy Murphy chose to help. That's a very good storyline. That's a very good storyline, because we talk about branches on the tree, but we also talk about how a good angle accomplishes more than one thing. Well, this accomplished more than one thing. This accomplished at least three things. It wiped out Buddy Murphy's losses and reset him as a major player. It showed that Seth Rollins maybe really does have the ability to lure people into his click. Maybe he is the locker room leader he always said he was, because it seems there are a lot of people who are siding with him. And three, it gets over, well, Seth Rollins needed help. They weren't going to win this unless Buddy Murphy joined the fold, and Seth knew it, and he pulled one out of his ass. And it technically accomplishes a fourth, and that is, it leaves the question in fans' minds, where does Samoa Joe, KO, and the Big Show turn now? They're going to need that fourth member. That's good. When a wrestling angle can accomplish those things, four things in one match, I can live with the fact that the match was, yeah, there was a couple of good spots. It wasn't a hideous match. It just wasn't a, I don't know what kind of a fist fight. It wasn't a fist fight. It was just a Falls Count Anywhere street fight. But still, the match was good enough. And we left Raw with that moment where you say, uh-oh, what's KO and his crew going to do? I wonder if more people are going to join Rollins in the future. We thought maybe it was just going to be these three and that's it, but I guess not. We have questions. We're curious. Where is this going to go from here? That's a positive. Always leave the fans with something that you say, oh, man, I wonder what's going to happen next. That's a good thing. So while I don't think this show was, by the way, Jerry Lawler did a brilliant job of announcing this week. I particularly loved the fact where he was asked, did you ever in your career have any of those opponents that you just couldn't seem to, you know, to get by? And he said, oh, did I? I've been in the business a long time. How many you want? Nick Bockwinkel, Bill Dundee. When I got here to the WWE, Bret the Hitman Hart. There's always those people that, for whatever reason, no matter how good you are, there's always those people that seem to have your number and you just can't get by them. Well, what did that do? A, it told a little story about Jerry Lawler and some of the things he's done and reminded people, you know, of his career. But it also kind of took the heat off Buddy Murphy for losing, because what he's saying is, look, a legend like me, I had those guys. I had guys I couldn't get by. So if Buddy Murphy can't get by Aleister Black, that's not necessarily mean he can't get by somebody that we think is even better than Aleister Black. It's just chemistry. Certain people, for whatever reason, you don't feel comfortable with and you don't seem to be able to get by. So by that very statement, Jerry Lawler almost single-handedly excused Buddy Murphy's losses. Mike, I thought it was a brilliant spot.
I thought it was a brilliant spot as well. And look, we're talking about who's the guy that's going to be on that other team. Well, the first logical choice, because he's beaten Buddy Murphy three times, is Aleister Black. But Aleister Black is supposedly a heel.
He's not really a heel, but he's supposed to be this loner. I hope they don't do that, Mike, because then that ruins Aleister Black's persona, as it's me against everybody. I don't have any friends. I fight who I fight. Knock on my door and I'll fight you. I hope it's not him. I'm hoping against hope it's Eric Rowan.
Right. Right. You know, I hope it's not him. But knowing the WWE.
Yeah. Because guess what, Mike? If it's Aleister Black, he's going to lose. Because he can't win. He can't win now, because then they'd say, well, okay, there was no difference then. Why did Buddy Murphy join? It made no difference. Buddy Murphy joined and nothing happened. You know Aleister Black's going to lose with Seth Rollins tripping him or AOP doing something. It won't work. Leave Aleister Black out of it. Aleister Black shouldn't care about anybody but himself. Bring somebody else into the fold. My idea still holds. Have one of those guys crush that cage. Or steal that cage. Or do something. To piss off Eric Rowan. So that Eric Rowan can say, I don't like any of you guys. But I like them a lot less. So I'll be in your corner with these guys. Against these guys. That would be kind of cool. So anyway, running down all of Raw. What did we think of it? Well, it was better than your average Raw in some aspects. I don't think all the matches delivered. You look at this on paper and you're like, this is a little mini pay-per-view. Really? There were at least four matches that you say, that, okay. These are big-time matches. I don't think most of them didn't come off with a big fight feel, and that includes the main event. But what it did do, I think, is it furthered some people's worth in the company, and it created some suspense. At least the last match did. Now, there were stumbling blocks. There's no way Sarah Logan should be tapping out in under a minute to Charlotte Flair. No way. The thing with the Viking Raiders, it's not working. The thing with the Street Profits, knowing the card ahead of time and reading it off like they're the bookers, it's not working. The Eric Rowan thing, you better bring this home next week. It's getting old, and it needs to be brought home. However, I think you hit a home run with the match with Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy again. I think you hit a home run with how you handled Buddy Murphy's loss. I think you hit a home run with the ending. You can thank Jerry Lawler and put a bonus in his paycheck for basically explaining to fans why sometimes a great, great, great wrestler who's going to go on to great things and hold many championships and be a Hall of Famer can still have that one person they can't get by, and that doesn't mean they're a jabron. Brilliant, brilliant on Jerry Lawler's part. And I think that, you know, Drew McIntyre, they made a mistake. And the mistake was they thought he was going to get cheered above Randy Orton, and he didn't, not in Kentucky. For some reason, they like Randy Orton down there, and Drew McIntyre was trying to get them to rally around him, and it was Orton they were cheering for. So that was probably a mistake. If you wanted to further Drew McIntyre's heel or face persona, that was probably a mistake. As far as the Singh brothers getting their asses beat, what, you know, whatever. Becky Lynch, you know, you could say it was a mistake. It's okay, I guess. It's not the end of the world. It's not a tragic mistake. The Rusev thing, that's getting old. So it's an A-plus show on paper. But I don't think it was an A-plus show in execution. I'm going to give it a B-. I think some of the things were A+. The storyline writing and the way you handled Buddy Murphy and his three consecutive losses was an A+. Absolute A+. The match itself was certainly a strong A. But other things on the show brought it down. So my pick here for this week is you know, a B-, Mike. I thought it was good, but not as great as it should have been on paper.
I thought it was good and not as good as it should have been on paper. I'm going to give it a little bit worse than that. I'm going to say a C+. And, again, I want to see what guy they come up with to put with KO's crew. I mean, you got two bigger guys with all three of those guys are bigger guys. The Big Show, KO, and of course, Joe. Do they want to go with? Do they want to go with another big guy, or do they want to go with a Ray Jr. or a Ricochet or somebody like that, a speed guy? Because basically, what's his name is a speed guy. Buddy Murphy is a speed guy. Yeah.
It could be Ricochet. It could be. I mean, we saw Ricochet get a victory tonight. It could be Ricochet. I hope it's not Ricochet because I would rather that they stuck with the people who were kind of like themselves. Like Kevin Owens, out of the three that's currently there, Kevin Owens is the most like pragmatic. Samoa Joe is just like battle, battle, fight, fight. Big Show's the same way. Kevin Owens is the guy that says, what's our plan? You know, how do we prepare for this? He should be that guy. I don't want to see a Ricochet saying, okay, guys, what is our overall plan? And how are we, I don't want to see that. And I don't want to see Aleister Black break his character. And suddenly he's a chatterbox talking about how we're going to, you know, conquer these people. I would rather see Eric Rowan. I would rather see them not pick a speed guy. I'd rather see them take Eric Rowan. After all, Seth Rollins is a speed guy too. Seth Rollins, only 211, 212. And, you know, they let him do it. So I would rather see them pick another big guy so that Kevin Owens remains the guy that's the more pragmatic, planning, talkative type guy. Let the others be the big, mean, tear their heads off type guys. I'd much rather that. Having said that, I think Mike is probably right. I think they're going to go the other way. I think they're going to go with a smaller guy. Todd, what'd you give it this week? It was, you know, it's a hard show to judge because some of the great things were really great and some of the bad things were ridiculous.
Well, on paper, it looks like it's an A+, but in reality, it's a B+.
Okay, so you're giving it a B+, too. Look, I give them an A+ for trying. I think the WWE tried very hard this week. I really do. I just think that they dropped the ball a couple times. With the Drew McIntyre ending was a head-scratcher. Throwing Sarah Logan to the wolves was a head-scratcher when you could have promoted it. Having Rusev clean pinned and just to go on to have a mixed match is a head-scratcher, because how is Liv Morgan going to benefit from, you know, put it this way. What do you think would happen if Charlotte Flair or Becky Lynch stepped into the ring right now with Lana? Your answer would be they would destroy her in under a minute.
Right.
So if Liv Morgan and her go 50-50 in a match, how does that make Liv Morgan look like she could possibly take on Charlotte Flair or Becky Lynch? It doesn't. This is kind of stalling Liv Morgan's career and her comeback, which is not exactly the opposite of what I want to see. I want to see more women main eventers. I want to see Sarah Logan get a victory, or at least, you know, extend the feud. I want to see Liv Morgan literally be, what's the right word for it? Literally be the girl that that Lana fears. I don't want to fight her. She'll tear my head off. Instead, Lana's like, come on, bitch. You ain't nothing. How is that? How is that? That's the thing I don't get. That's the thing I don't get. So those were all mistakes, because you could have had Sarah Logan, if not victorious, at least extend the feud to say she's on the level of Charlotte. That would have been great. You could have had Lana run away from Liv Morgan. Well, you say Lana don't want none of Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan will tear her head off, and she knows it. And that was the distraction. Instead, the distraction is Lana's beating her ass. Those are mistakes. But I was so happy with the way they handled the Buddy Murphy loss. I was first livid because I said, Jesus Christ, he's lost again. Okay, got his shoulder up for the first black mask. Big deal. Three times in a row. But then I remembered what Lawler said, which was a brilliant, brilliant commentary. And then what happened afterwards, again, it had the relatability, it had the motivation, and it's going to have a payoff. So how can I say that was anything less than great? It was great. So there were some great moments on this week's Raw. There were some sit up and take notice. I think the WWE is trying very hard, but I think they're running 50-50 with their ideas. Some of their ideas are, wow, that's great. That absolutely is the right track. And some of them are like, what did you think was going to come of this? Sarah Logan comes back and just gets dusted. What do you think is going to come of that? Liv Morgan comes back and Lana beats her ass. Well, what do you think is going to come of that? You think Charlotte Flair and Becky should be like, I don't want to fight that Liv Morgan. She's tough. When Lana's beating her ass? No. So there goes Liv Morgan's career. You're not doing anything for the women's division. You're just keeping it Charlotte, Becky, Charlotte, Becky. That's going to get old. It's old now. So that's why, unfortunately, it's not an A+ show. I know a lot of people gave it an A+. Oh, did you see the ending? Yeah, well, yeah. It's great to end well. If you end well, people always forget the garbage. I'll agree with that. So ending well is always a positive thing. And booking matches ahead of time so we know what's happening next week, that's always a positive thing. And now they can get on Twitter and fight it out, and we can all watch, and that's fun. So, yeah, they did some good things. I'm not unhappy with this week's show. I just hope they continue it. Tom, what was your rating this week, quickly?
You know, my rating for Monday Night Raw, I'll give it a B+. It was a really good show. I enjoyed myself.
Okay, so you're kind of in the same boat as us. It had its moments. SmackDown, I know they're having a tables match. We'll see what happens on Wednesday, of course, if AEW continues its ratings domination over NXT. Should be an interesting couple of days. We will be back here on Friday to discuss it all. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.